Pickaxe.
Hello, I'm Wheels, the Dungeon Master for Storybreakers. Love Critical Role in movies like Hot Fuzz and Spotlight? Actual play series Storybreakers combines the fantasy adventure of Dungeons & Dragons with small-town comedy and mystery in an episodic tale of journalists on the hunt for the secret underbelly of a tiny town where nothing seems to happen.
But excuse me if I don't think a bunch of ragtag journalists from a podunk town are actually going to be of any help.
But technically, I don't come from here.
When the mysterious arrival of a celebrity from the Heroes and Adventurers Guild sets off a strange conspiracy, the group will have to leave what they think they know about the world at the door if they're ever to unravel the truth at the heart of this seemingly nondescript town.
It's not front page of the Sussire Star News.
I pulled up the today's installment of the news to see what the front page actually is.
There's a big picture of a pumpkin that's been stepped on, and it says, "Outrage as pumpkin stepped on."
Storybreaker Season 1 in its entirety is available for listening right now wherever you get your podcasts, with Season 2 on the way. Find out more at dicebreaker.com.
Hello and welcome back to The Review of Death, a Doctor Who podcast, your weekly, for the next 6 weeks, podcast about Doctor Who, because guess what, Billy?
What, Matt?
Doctor Who Flux is on the air.
Get fluxed.
How dare you?
That's crazy stuff.
It's bonkers, isn't it?
I can't believe Doctor Who's back.
I know, it's amazing. It's a good feeling, isn't it? It's always nice when you think,
God, Doctor Who at the end of the week.
Yeah.
And your Sunday, you can plan your Sunday out. Just got to make sure that you have no plans to socialise with anybody from 6:25 onwards.
How did you get on? Because it was Halloween this episode.
Yeah. Well, we went out on the Saturday night. And then Sunday just, that was... Although we did get locked out of the flat Sunday morning.
Oh, shit.
And I thought,
did you have a panic attack?
I did. If I can't get into the house in the next 18 hours, it's going to be a problem. But, it was nice. It's nice to have Doctor Who on when it's dark as well.
Yeah.
Lovely.
It just adds to the ambience.
Yeah.
And did you watch it live?
Watched it live.
Oh, I had to wait because...
He's not a real fan.
Jonathan was... asking about, so I had to wait for him to come home.
Excellent.
He's like, "Don't watch it without me." I was like, "All right."
Well, you can't do that.
No.
I mean, there was a has this gone on record, the conversation you have with Johnny? Johnny is Matt's brother. Hello, I'm Billy. This is Matt.
Oh, hello, as an introduction. In case you haven't noticed.
And
we have said our names at the start of this, so
okay.
People...
that's fine then.
You hope people would have assumed.
I'd hope so, by now.
Yeah.
And if you don't know us, you'll get to know us over the next 6 weeks.
Yeah. And this is Jerry Davis.
This is Jerry, the Cyberman. Johnny was saying, first Doctor Who season in how many bloody years that we can watch together,
yeah.
And you're going to go and watch it with that bloody... he's not even blood, all that stuff.
So
you watched it with Johnny?
Watched it with Johnny.
Okay.
And Mum.
I'm sure everybody's going to be aching to know what Johnny's impression of it was before we start. Our impression of it doesn't really matter,
yeah,
as long as Johnny's out there
first. Yeah, yeah, yeah. At the beginning, I thought, oh dear, this is not going to go well. And at the end, he was like... that was pretty good.
Was he completely silent all the way through, and then you turned to him at the end?
He was
worried that he was going to strike you.
There were occasions. Thanks to the marvels of modern technology, where you can pause your TV, I did have to pause it a couple of times and rewind it because of there was chatting.
Because
there was bits being missed, and I was like, "Hang on a minute, I'm not having this."
Can't be having chatting during Doctor Who. My family is the first. It's the second season of Doctor Who I've watched, not at home.
Right.
Since I've moved out. And my dad always used to joke before it came on, "God, imagine if there was a power cut now." And about an hour before Doctor Who came on, there was a power cut in our flat.
And you know what I thought? I was like...
was there a power cut at yours as well?
It was all over. Yeah.
Did the whole of Bristol go dark?
Yeah. The computers surged in this office.
Wow.
Yeah. Apparently, according to TJ, who is our lovely studio operator...
Hello, TJ.
...who does all the sound and all the cameras
If you
stuff,
can hear me now.
He said that apparently it might have been a solar flare. So in perfect Doctor Who fashion, there were solar flares going off.
Could have been a flux.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into it.
Yeah.
What were your hopes and dreams and fears for flux going into it? Because it's that typical Doctor Who thing. As you get older, the lead time of your childish excitement starts to get smaller.
Yeah.
Like, instead of it being, "Oh my God, Doctor Who starts in 3 months and I literally cannot wait."
Yeah.
When you're like 9.
Yeah.
Getting down and down and down. And so like maybe the last hour before it comes on, you're like, "Oh, new Doctor Who's going to start in a bit."
I was a bit like that. Like I said, I was waiting for my brother to get home.
And then we had to eat as well. So it was like all this time I was just like eating, thinking, everybody just, can you all eat your food much quicker? Because I want to watch Doctor Who. And my brother, bloody blasphemy, was like, oh, we could watch it out here in the dining room while we're eating our food.
I was like, not on that tiny, not on a tiny television. A tiny CRT.
Yeah, it's like, you can get, oh no, it's been upgraded. Oh, it's a flat screen.
Okay, fine.
LCD. Okay. Yeah, and I was just like, you freaking get out.
What you could have done is you could have got your mum to tape it for you.
She
was doing EastEnders, taping new EastEnders up to like a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I love that. Well,
proper old fashioned, old school Doctor Who viewing. Wilderness Years viewing.
Oh.
On a VHS.
What you should have done is you should have taped it, sent it to someone in North America, and then got a copy 8 generations
On lower. An NTSC tape.
And about 12 years later, and then watched it.
Good idea.
That didn't happen. We were able to watch it. I watched it on iPlayer. I don't watch stuff we don't have an aerial
TV license.
We haven't. I pay my TV license. It doesn't go into the telly, into the wall,
right,
into the aerial and stuff. We just watch it off of iPlayer, off the PlayStation.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Does that count? That must count towards a live viewing figure. I don't know if it does.
Oh dear. I mean, I didn't watch it live, so I can't say anything.
Okay. Well, I watched it a second time, so that's added to the plus 24 or whatever it is.
I'll tell you something before we get into the nitty gritty.
Yeah.
One thing that I think everyone was quite excited about, Doctor Who, and when it finished, everyone, the response seemed pretty positive.
Yeah.
And then I woke up this morning and I saw someone say something about viewing figures and I was like,
Oh no, this is going to have to start again, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. It was like I had some sort of youthful air about me where viewing figures weren't a thing. It was just you watched it and it was good and that was it.
But it was 4.4, wasn't it? It was pretty good.
So it was all right.
It was higher than everything from series 12 except
Spyfall
Part 1, I think.
Okay.
Which is still
pretty good
for an overnight.
I mean, I don't know what... Do we know viewing figures for anything else?
On that day, I mean, it doesn't matter because it's Doctor Who. It's the only TV show that matters in terms of viewing figures, apparently. And, oh my God, you don't want to be a professional wrestling fan at the moment.
No.
Because at the moment, you've got WWE and AEW, this new company that's come in.
Right.
They're trying to become the new number one.
Oh, okay.
And so they're going head-to-head on some nights. And so viewing figures and demo... Because in America, they go into demographics.
Oh,
so it's like the 18 to 34 is what they want to get. And even if they don't beat WWE in the overall rating, if they beat them in the 18 to 24 demographic, they've basically won.
Right. Okay.
So at least we don't have to have that conversation about Doctor Who.
Imagine?
My God. Anyway, Doctor Who, Flux, Chapter 1, The Halloween Apocalypse. What a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. I stick by that being a poo-poo title.
The Halloween Apocalypse?
Yeah, particularly
I kind of preferred it a bit afterwards.
Did you? Like, my brother turned around and was like, it was a bit of a naff title because he's like, the actual Halloween-y element of it was very minimal.
It was arbitrary, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
And it was the first time that there's been a Halloween themed episode or a Halloween episode that takes place on Halloween both in universe and out of universe.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And you mentioned Trick or Treat being a better title.
And he said it,
gets name dropped by Swarm.
Yeah.
And then Yaz says it.
Yeah.
And then Dan says it.
Yeah.
Or the kids say it's Dan. And it's just like, well, it's staring you in the face. There's another thing in there as well that ties into this issue I've had with Chris Chibnall where it's like he doesn't take the obvious route. Not in a Stephen Moffat, it's obvious, so I'm not going to do it because that's too easy sort of way. But in a, how did you not comprehend that, which started with a Resolution.
Right.
Not calling it Resolution of the Daleks.
Oh, yeah.
And then obviously you've got Revolution the next year or the next special, and the special that comes up next, the last one or whatever, will probably be of the Daleks and hopefully will be an R and it will be a nice trilogy.
R
of the Daleks. Well, it was shot in Bristol.
It was, yeah.
Spoilers. But we'll get to it later. But it's another one of those staring you in the face like,
okay,
come on, mate. Come on. Pre-credits.
I wasn't overly impressed.
The gravity bar thing?
No, my brother wasn't either. He was like, as soon as it went cut to the titles, you went... He's like, well, that was stupid, or that was... He said something, and I was like, oh, come on, it's just, you know, isn't it?
It's a nice high-octane... It's the same thing that the Bond things do.
Yeah.
It's a tangentially related action sequence to get the blood pumping, get you into the story, title sequence, then we can focus on the actual thing that we're dealing with this week.
Yeah, I think some of the effects were...
Some of the effects were quite good, and some of them...
The effects overall were brilliant.
Yeah,
the CGI was excellent. I just think at the beginning... It just didn't feel like they were there.
I think it felt like
a bit of a computer game land that they were inhabiting.
It's difficult, I think, when you're trying to blend the physics of wire work with then artificial physics and movement and stuff.
And it was like, I think it looked really awkward when the bar snaps and they're just spinning out themselves. And it was like, you don't look like you're spinning. You just look like you're hovering in the air. Yeah. Everything around you is moving, but it's fine.
I don't think people should lose track of this at all to remember that this was shot during COVID.
I know.
You wouldn't know.
No, not at all.
I mean, besides the fact that
I kept thinking it while I was watching it. It was like, this was shot during COVID. How did they do this?
I think there's only three or four scenes where there's more than two people talking to each other in a room.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought, if that's the template, if we're getting that every week, because, you know... I think this is a Chris Chibnall thing. I think this is something that you acknowledge now watching Doctor Who. The scripts are very dense with dialogue.
Yeah.
And I think you can get away with it when you've got action happening in a scene. But if it's a two-hander, there were some elements of this where it's overwritten and over-talky.
Okay.
But if that's all you've got to rely on when you're shooting under... very heavy safety precautions with a pandemic, because we were deep into the pandemic and the lockdown when this was being shot. And obviously the laws and the rules were changing and adapting constantly, not just for regular folk, but also in the TV industry. I was working in a studio just as them during the pandemic, during the depths of it. And rules were changing constantly and being stuck to, and then some days they're a bit more lax and all that kind of stuff. So I can't imagine for a production of that scale with that many members of crew and the costuming and the makeup and all that kind of stuff, to have done it is a remarkable feat within itself.
It's a miracle, isn't it? That we've
claps
even
all round for everybody
Doctor
involved.
Who.
So yeah, massive props for getting it done.
Yeah.
So we come out of the pre-credit sequence.
Oh, we do have two Easter eggs.
We do, yes, go on. So we have
Nitro 9, which I was expecting my brother to have more of a reaction to. And it sort of went past and I was like, Nitro 9? He was like, I was like, oh.
That's him, no, he's waiting for something to annoy him. He's like, well, is that good enough? There were two Seventh Doctor references in that opening sequence.
Yeah, because she says about the voice-activated handcuffs, or it might have been when I was Scottish.
Did you notice she rolled her R?
She did roll her R.
And then she shouted at it as the 12th Doctor.
Yeah.
That was quite sweet.
It was good.
I didn't quite get the gag when they land on the sofa, or the mattress, which is going to get the Thasmin bloody...
Yeah, I've already seen
fans
it.
...fans going mental about it, so good for you.
Do you know, I'll be honest, at first I was like, what's that doing there? Why is there a mattress in the town? It's just like, they've been thinking, what have they been getting up to?
Well, everybody who stands it knows what they've been getting up to.
And a trampoline as well. I mean, just for extra buoyancy.
I liked that reference. Again, this may be another Chris Chibnall thing. A lot of people saying that this is the best thing they think he's written, or it's one of the stronger scripts that he's written.
Yeah.
It's definitely tight.
Yeah.
But there are some foibles, I think, that you kind of look at and you go, well, that's kind of classic Chibs. Where, like, okay, so they always knew that they were going to have to land into the TARDIS, land on that trampoline.
Yeah, I thought that. I was like, well, how?
And it's the same later with the Carvanista, or what are they called? I wrote it down, the Lupari ships.
The Lupari, yeah.
Even these planets are getting disintegrated by the flux.
Yeah.
But it just so happens when all of these things are knitted together, like that, and it's ripped straight out of bloody Guardians of the Galaxy.
Isn't it? I hadn't thought of that. Well done.
It's funny that that's the only structure in the known universe that will not fall to the flux.
I know we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but I actually thought that it was a bit of a bait and switch. I thought, oh, they're going to do all that.
And then it's going to be pointless. And
they were going to wipe out Earth. And it was going to be like...
That might still happen.
Because
we haven't seen it actually consumed yet.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like the cliffhanger was going to be something like, sorry, Dan, Yaz, you're the last two humans in existence.
So, let's not get to the ending yet. Because, I mean, there's lots of really cool stuff to talk about. I think the general vibe that we're getting from talking about it is that we liked this story.
I loved it. Obviously, it was very much, this is going to come up in a couple of weeks' time. Oh,
It's chapter one.
It's chapter one. It's a lot of setup. And at times I did find myself going, I might be getting a bit lost here, but it was fine. The only thing that I thought didn't really need to be in it, and I'm sure obviously it will be explained later, was the stuff right at the start, which was immediately after the title sequence, in Victorian Liverpool, where he's talking about the tunnels.
Williamson's tunnels.
Yeah.
Did you know that they're legit?
Yes, they are, aren't they? I remember seeing it on Twitter a couple of weeks ago.
Nobody actually knows what they were made for.
I mean, that is perfect Doctor Who fodder, isn't it?
I did do a little bit of research into it, and according to Wikipedia, the two main answers for what they actually were built for is it was either a philanthropic cause by Williamson to give work to the poor.
Right.
I think it was like, you don't want to demean yourself asking for charity without putting like graft in.
Right,
so they
okay.
wanted to give people an opportunity to put some work in to earn some money.
Yeah.
But also that apparently he may have been like a religious extremist.
Right.
And he was preparing the tunnels for the end times.
Ah. And he does kind of talk about that, doesn't he?
The cataclysmic, all that kind of. So I'm interested in this whole, there's dynamics across all of space and time that seem to be being drawn together.
Yeah.
And I think my cynicism with that kind of story being told before in the programme is, one of these is not going to get paid off or is going to be a massive red herring and never explained.
Yeah, they feel like very disparate elements that you sort of do think to yourself, like, how is this going to tie into that?
I'm already a little bit concerned about wee things that maybe people haven't focused on, like the TARDIS oozing goo.
Yeah.
Or the, you know, the spatial dimensions kind of collapsing around the TARDIS. It's a really cool visual.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things I'm like, if nothing kind of gets resolved, I worry it's something like that.
Yeah.
It's one of those story threads that won't get...
Well, I've got a thought about that in the TARDIS, but we'll get to
that. Should we get to that in a bit?
Yeah, so what happened next? We saw this bloke.
We see this bloke and they're talking about building the excavations in these tunnels. And then we meet Dan in modern day Liverpool doing his lovely speech about Liverpool. And I've been to the Museum of Liverpool. If you've never been to Liverpool before, go to Liverpool. It's a fantastic city, even if you're not a Beatles, Apple Scruff super freak like me.
I went when I was... 3.
Really?
Yeah, for my brother's graduation.
And so you don't remember a jot of it?
Anything, so...
Well, it's a good excuse to go again, because it's a beautiful city. Chris Chibnall does have a thing about sort of elevating second cities.
Yeah.
Like Sheffield, Liverpool, Bristol.
Yeah.
You know, just including the suspension bridge alone is something cool. So props to you, Chris Chibnall, for not just doing London and Cardiff, which is quite nice. Then after Dan's introduction, we meet Di, who kind of... is another one of those characters that, it's like tangentially related.
Yeah.
She's such a small thread, or seemingly such a small thread. She could easily be forgotten if you're not updating the audience every week about the progress of what these characters have been up to since we last saw them. Like Claire as well.
Yeah.
Are we getting ahead?
Yeah.
But, you know.
What did you think of Dan as a character? Dan the man?
The thing is, it's John Bishop playing a man called Dan.
Yeah.
And the man called Dan is very much like John Bishop. And I don't mind that at all, because I find John Bishop really affable.
Yeah.
I find him a very, very warm screen presence.
Yeah.
I think, again, you know, that is a really good bit of casting, in much the same way that, you know, Graham, I forgot his name already.
Bradley Walsh.
Dan and bloody John Bishop have already replaced Graham and Bradley Walsh in my heart. He's good. I would have liked a bit more of an introduction with the Doctor, but then I also quite like that it was just Doctor Dan, run for your life sort of thing. That was quite nice.
And I like that he was not necessarily blasé, but he, I don't know, he just had a different attitude to it. I guess, you know, they've done the whole, like, oh my god, he's big!
Yeah.
You know, I like that his introduction to space and stuff wasn't via the Doctor. It was via the Dog Man.
And he's being insulted all the way through it. Like,
But
it is like, I was watching it and thinking, maybe we are the species that would like gawp and take slightly longer to process everything around them. Like, you know, we've got no idea of the vastness of space and the interconnections of these characters and these alien species. And so it would take a while for us to get our heads around it. So that was quite sweet.
Yeah.
Then... We had, I think, one of the strongest scenes in it, which was Swarm's introduction.
Yeah.
Straight away off the bat, those two people that have been sent down to check on him.
From the division.
Both wielding guns that Gat was wielding in...
But he mentions it, doesn't he? Swarm says something about
the division. Yeah, he pronounces it slightly weirdly, though. He says your division or...
Yeah, he doesn't say the division. He says something.
Division.
But yeah, they've got the same guns.
Yeah.
So, were they Time Lords?
Well, that was what I was thinking.
Mm. Now, obviously, this creature, Swarm, whatever he is, regenerated.
Yeah.
Obviously not in the Time Lordy way, but regenerated.
Still,
And I read an article on the Radio Times. The old Swarm is played by a totally different actor.
No, really?
And credited as such, yeah.
Is Azure played by a different actor?
No, I think it's still the same lady. Yeah.
Okay,
But yeah, so that's interesting. So it is a full bodily regeneration. So it's got to be linked to the whole...
Timeless Child. So yeah.
Probably the Time Lords pilfered this poor race's
abilities. Another one, yeah.
Yeah, and fine, you know, if that is the case, hell, it's happened before with the Time Lords. They're bastards for it, so fine, let them get on with it.
Interesting.
I don't mind that.
Do you remember as well, at the start of this run, one of the first sort of bits of iconography we saw of the show were crystals.
Yeah, this is what I was going to say.
And we've got crystals jutting out of this guy's
head. Meth Man.
Crystal Meth Man.
Yeah.
Jutting out of his shoulder as well.
Yeah.
He's got the world's, the biggest shoulder pads I've seen Sarah Green in Ghostwatch.
But this is what I'm thinking about the TARDIS. Because obviously the TARDIS is the same crystalline structure.
Right. Ah.
And this creature's coming back and now all of a sudden the TARDIS is oozing black gunge and all this bloody, like you said, the spatial alignment of stuff is all going cocked up.
That's really interesting.
So, what does it all mean, Billy? This is the exciting thing.
That is the most exciting through line of all of this. When the Doctor mentions the division, that was like a proper, we haven't forgotten about this.
Yeah.
Okay, we can address this.
And I'm gonna say it now.
Yep. Is this a prediction?
Yeah, Joe Martin is going to be in this series, surely.
Yeah, okay.
Surely. You can't be deep diving into all this division stuff without Joe Martin turning up.
I did think when Claire ran up to them in the street, maybe because she's got a long coat on,
I did think,
is this another Timeless Doctor?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, technically everybody's a Timeless Doctor. Bloody the ball boy that passed the ball to Trent Alexander-Arnold during that Barcelona match at Anfield is a Timeless Child.
Or is it just Squint and is David Tennant? Or something.
A very short David Tennant. Yeah.
Matt Smith was the football doctor.
He's a football doctor. You never know.
Was he wearing a bow tie? Someone have a look.
We'll find out. Also, I don't know if the design has changed because I looked at the gun and I thought that comically oversized gun does look familiar, but it doesn't look quite the same as I remember it. But I was struck by how it has that kind of crystalline webbing along
the side.
That silver and orange thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I kind of thought, it's like that's such a cornerstone of the prop department that they've obviously look at that prop every single day.
Yeah.
Is there a link? Obviously, I think it can't be because it's made forged by the Doctor out of Sheffield steel.
Yeah. There must be some sort of tie to be like this Time Lordy technology.
Yeah. Sonic Blaster or something.
Yeah. so that was really cool. I thought that the makeup for both versions of Swarm was incredibly impressive.
The regeneration effect
looked
was
really
so
gruesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
So cool. I think these are probably the scariest, actually genuinely scariest monsters that we've had.
Yeah.
And then when you tie that into the fact that ultimately the scariest Doctor Who monster probably of all time, the Weeping Angels, were also in the story and got a really good scene.
Yeah.
Blink and the first part of that Matt Smith two-parter are probably the only good instances of them being used up to this point.
Yeah.
Because obviously you see them move in the second half of that two-parter, which totally ruins them.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Statue of Liberty thing.
Yeah.
And the cherubs are quite cool, but, you know, again, it's a gimmick on top of the existing one.
Yeah.
So it's cool just to see a base level paint by numbers. That is what they do.
Yeah.
For a reintroduction for the audience, her constantly saying, don't blink, can't blink, mustn't blink, they'll get you, was really good.
Yeah.
And it was a really effective use of them. I thought it was a really good scene, actually, for the Weeping Angels. But yeah, the Swarm and Azure or whatever this race, if they're the Ravagers or whatever.
The Ravagers, isn't it?
Or the Ravages or however Jodie pronounced it in that promo that they mistyped on the subtitles. I don't know. Really, really cool look. All of the scenes involving Swarm felt important.
Yeah, and stood out, didn't they?
They stood out.
And when he kills that guy. So obviously Azure, she looked like a human. Are we thinking that it was kind of like with the Doctor, almost like a chameleon arch thing?
Well, that was what I was thinking. We might as well have just move on to that bit because we've got the stuff with Dan and let's talk about the what's his name, Carvanista.
Yeah.
What did you think of Carvanista?
Well, as a character, fine, and the whole idea that their race are dogs and they're like, they're bonded to humanity and they have to come and save them. I thought that was great. I thought it was a very clever bait and switch that, actually, he's not like a bounty hunter trying to get Dan for whatever reason.
Yeah, the species recall. Yeah. Like, that's a really cool idea, isn't it?
I mean, it was a bit weird because he was like, well, hang on a minute. He was like being really like, I could just kill you now. And it's like, hang on, you're there to rescue him? That was a bit weird.
Yeah.
On the second viewing, it became a bit more like, but it's fine.
Yeah.
My real issue with that character was, I thought the makeup was appalling.
Did you?
I thought it... I turned around to Jonathan and I was like, it's nice to see that the Doctor Who makeup has not improved since the Planet of the Cheetah People.
When...
Actually, no, Kara's makeup is probably far more emotive. It just looked like a man in a furry mask.
I think it's because... I think it's the muzzle and like the fact that didn't move.
So that was
You could see... There was obviously like a chin molded in the mask, but he's talking behind it.
Yeah,
and you can see his lips move behind it.
Yeah, and I was just like, you know, when you look at some... So I think someone brought up Branigan on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that makeup was... It was so... It felt like it was actually part of the face, whereas this just felt like he had a furry head on. It looked like he could have been a bloody football mascot. Do you know what I mean?
I know people love it.
There
were certain bits of... There were certain scenes where it looked better than others.
Yeah.
So that... back and forth between the Doctor and Carvanista when she asks about the division and she asks about the recall signal, all that kind of stuff. That, because it was really tight on his face.
Yeah.
That was when it didn't work as well. But in the scenes where he's having a go at Dan and wandering around, that was fine because you weren't tight on his face and they were kind of cutting, because he wasn't saying particularly important dialogue.
Yeah.
They were cutting back to Dan more. Mm. You didn't see the mouth not moving as much.
Yeah.
But I really liked the character.
Sorry, just dying.
No, he's all right. He can get through it. I liked it. I liked the character. I liked the accent. You know, it was just nice to have an alien that wasn't like just RP.
Johnny hated that.
Really?
Yeah, he was like, he's a
bloody snob.
He is just terrible like that. And he was like, where's he got a Sheffield accent?
Oh, shut up. All that laptop business, I have to say.
That was weird. I did not like that.
Now, can I... So, you know, we mentioned before in the video we did for the Matt Smith double bill that we did. All the Sonic can do everything sort of thing.
Yeah.
I'm seeing way too much of the Sonic.
Yeah.
It just does everything.
Yeah.
Which is annoying. And it takes away the agency from Jodie's character.
Yeah.
Jodie, you know... She does that thing, Liverpool, she can do that.
Yeah.
She can taste soil, and that's funny. But when you just go, burr, well, what are you adding to the character? You know, it's fine, it's quick. It gets you through the story quicker.
Yeah.
But then also it's like, she just sonics the thing onto the telly and then you're like, so how exactly is she able to see the tracker?
Yeah.
Like, but then you should have surely worked out that was his technology because it displayed everything you needed to know.
Yeah, see, that whole thing was weird.
And the thing that really annoyed me, and this was the thing I was talking about earlier, that the Chibnall kind of, come on, mate, that's obvious, is the shrinking of the house.
Mm.
And they run out of it, and I'm like, I went to Stealth, shit, it's the Master.
Yeah, so I said the thing.
Because I hadn't seen that symbol before that came up on the screen.
Yeah.
And in the blink of an eye, when I first saw it, I thought it was an M.
Oh, right.
And I was like, oh! Okay, so he's going to be in it earlier than we suspected. Okay, interesting. And
it wasn't.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you've just reintroduced the TCE.
Yeah.
Like, how do you not see that you need to come up with something different? Because everybody's going to go, but that's the master's trick.
Yeah.
And now the master isn't in the story. So where's that come from?
And I was almost expecting Yaz or the Doctor to say,
we all know who does that.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, just something, or make a remark about, oh, you know, let's pick that up from the master or something.
And like, like one of the best sort of scenes for the master in ages, when he gets the matchbox out.
Yeah.
And that was only last year.
Yeah, yeah, they made a big deal of the TCE in the last series.
Yeah, they did. And it's like, okay, so come up with something else.
Yeah.
Because that's just a weird, lazy... But is it lazy? But it's that thing, like the, you know, resolution of the Daleks title. It's like, how did you not see that that wasn't going to quite work?
I think with resolution, he was just like, we just don't want the Daleks. There's this whole secrecy thing, isn't it? I don't want to tell anybody. I mean, look at the cover. The cover for the DVD doesn't even have a Dalek on it.
I know.
It's got some bloody extras who are in it for all about 5 seconds.
Mental.
And that whole thing with Dan and his house. So obviously Dan is... living in poverty,
but he also works at a food bank. He's refusing help.
Yeah, you know, they've made a very good point of saying like he's a stand up bloke.
Yeah, yeah.
And the resolution to the whole laptop business and escaping the house was, oh, he's got a very fancy laptop.
Mm.
Oh, it mustn't be his, and then it blows up.
Yeah,
and I was like, that just doesn't make any sense.
No, and also like. He's got a framed Liverpool shirt from the year they won the title, and he's also got the new Liverpool shirt. They're like 60 quid a pop.
Yeah,
you know, like and he's got a season ticket as well.
Yeah.
So like, I know, you know, I'm not going to talk.
What are you thinking? Benefit fraud? But,
God no. I like the fact they've introduced that. You know, it is a kind of. I suppose some people could get annoyed and go like, that is the cheapest way possible to go like, this guy is an empathetic dude and you should like him. In the same way in the Woman Who Fell to Earth, you have not many people get calls from their grandchildren.
Yeah.
Oh no, we've got to feel sorry for the old bloke who's died now.
Yeah.
It was that sort of thing. But, you know, it does add a dimension to his character. Like, you know, we didn't know that much more about Graham being a stand-up bloke.
No.
Really, besides the fact that he just seems like an affable sort of working class guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, at least with Dan, we've got a layer of his character that may have gone over some people's heads. I'm sure it couldn't these days.
No.
But, it was a nice sort of layer to him, I thought.
I also want to take this opportunity to say, fuck whoever wrote that tweet and wrote that article about
Don't even give him the time of day.
That just appalling.
That's why I'm not interacting with Doctor Who Twitter over the course of Flux.
I think if you genuinely think anything about the fact that there's a disabled person and someone who's living in poverty in an episode of Doctor Who,
and that's a problem,
then get in the fucking sea.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Then we go to the Arctic Circle.
Yeah.
As soon as those two characters appeared, I went, Chameleon Arc.
Yeah, I thought you were their protector
sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then something else that threw me off, and I don't know if it's a design thing, I don't know if it's just me, but that spinning thing that was in their garage.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, is that Carvanese? Is that Carvanista's spinning thing that he
sent
after?
I thought it was at first. Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, are we supposed to know now? Is it supposed to be obvious where that's come from?
I mean, I guess is that more Gallifreyan stuff? I don't know. When in doubt,
but it must be Gallifreyan to a degree, because if they are related to the Time Lords, or they are Gallifreyans in some way.
Yeah, like I assumed that it was like the man was her jailer. And she was like a prisoner who had her mind wiped and was like living this false life.
And kind of
like with Joe Martin's character and whatever his name was, her husband. So I thought it was that sort of dynamic. And that alert was just to say, oh shit.
He's on his way.
Swarm's coming.
But then they go to bed like nothing's happened. There's no defences in the house. It's just, and then
Do
he turns up.
Do you keep your chilies in the fridge?
No.
No.
No, I don't.
I don't eat them. So.
I also don't quite understand that line when he gets Thanos'd.
Yeah.
And this had better particle effects than bloody the Avengers movies, by the way.
God, but all the stuff when the planets are disintegrating and all the people disintegrating. Brilliant.
Her face when it disintegrated into the actual character was really cool. I don't quite get the line, don't touch anything.
No, and I thought that on when I watched it the first time, and then when I watched it again, I thought, watch it with the subtitles
the first
on.
Time, I leant forward and went, what did he say?
Yeah.
Because then I thought, she's going to stand, and like, the flux isn't like a big cloud like we yeah. saw in the trailers. The flux is just, it's around you, and if you touch anything that's in this reality,
yeah.
it Thanoses you.
Yeah, because he did that like, scan.
I didn't, so was he scanning which one... Well, I guess he was going to take away with him, but surely he turned up and knew.
Yeah, or was he like infecting the room with fluxiness?
It was that scanner from the beginning of Aliens that comes in and does a quick thing of the room.
Yeah, I'm not Weird. Quite sure about that. Maybe that will be explained later on. Maybe we'll see more of.
It's
that.
Doctor Who. It won't be, but there we go. And that, you know, they promised that they'd warn us and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There's obviously, there's a lot of questions that we've got. And it's unfair to go, I'm annoyed I don't know the answer to this straight away, because we're not going to know the answer to any of this stuff straight away. No. It's part of storytelling.
Yeah. I don't know who it was. I think it might have been Scott Gray, the writer and artist of Doctor Who magazine's comics. I think he said that this serial, because it is a serial,
it is a serial,
will be as long, if not longer, than the Daleks' Master Plan.
Yeah, I did see
that. Isn't that bonkers? What a thing to think. Like, wow.
Imagine if it's as good by the end of it. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I mean, is that possible?
Possibly. It might be easier to sit through.
I mean, at least you can actually watch it.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, there you go. So then we have Thirsteen and Yaz meeting Claire.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, she gets zapped back in time.
Yeah.
Because we see her arriving wherever she gets zapped back by the Weeping Angel. Mm. And she makes a reference to, I have to go home the long way round because it's Halloween. So she's obviously told at a later date, you need to get zapped by this Weeping Angel, is what I assume that means.
Yes.
Which, again, in the same way as, you know, so why is Carvanista having a go at Dan? It's like, so if you know that Weeping Angel is supposed to get you...
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't know. Why are you so frightened of it?
Yeah, you just walk up to it and go...
All right, bud.
Yeah.
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 Get me. I'm here. Come and get me. I was blinking violently for the people listening.
Yeah.
So I don't quite understand why she was so frightened. But this is all stuff that, you know, we're asking and we're, you know, we don't know how this is going to turn out. Yaz can now co-pilot the TARDIS.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough.
Absolutely nothing wrong with that. If anybody has a problem with it, then you should have a problem with Donna being able to co-pilot the TARDIS as well, and everybody co-piloting it at the end of Journey's End.
Yeah.
Because, and you know, like loads of companions. Ben and Polly apparently in the audio dramas can bloody...
They really
the
can they?
So,
yeah,
you know.
Oh, fair enough. I want taking that opportunity.
Yeah.
This might even be what you're about to bring up. I really enjoyed the relationship between the Doctor and Yaz.
I like
the story.
That Yaz is kind of a bit mardy.
Yeah.
Like even with Dan.
Yeah.
Like that whole kind of, you know, Yaz is fine thing. She seems to have developed, you know, a thicker skin for stuff.
Yeah.
Probably being traveling for however long she has with a person who is just not telling her the truth about anything.
Yeah, this is what I like. I like that we've got the Doctor keeping these secrets from the companions, because it just adds a little more to the dynamic. Because obviously in the first series, which obviously, you know, I wasn't particularly keen on series 11, you know, it felt sort of almost a bit too chummy and just a bit too bland for me. But I like that there's these levels. And like they did it in the last series as well, in series 12, there was an element of that. That she was keeping secrets.
But I think she's actually coming through. Yeah. And I think the same for Jodie, actually. What did you think of her performance in this?
I really enjoyed her in this story.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed her. I thought you did the humorous stuff was well done. It wasn't like too goofy or daft or anything. I think it was just tonally very good. Mm. And I thoroughly enjoyed all the stuff where she was having her, not her angsty moments, but her moments of contemplation and her concern.
I do think there's going to be an interesting thread here, because she does mention it to Yaz. When Yaz starts going, like, you're not being honest with me, you need to let me in, sort of thing. And Jodie sort of goes, haven't we had a good time?
Yeah.
And that,
haven't we had a good time on that mattress?
Yeah.
I brought that mattress in, especially for you.
And look at all the blankets down on it. We've made quite a mess here.
There's some cushions and all.
Exactly. In one of the interviews that Jodie's done for this season, she does say that My Doctor grows up quite a lot, or she learns quite a lot about herself. And I wonder if that thread is actually, you know, I've shown you the universe. Isn't that enough? Why do you have to keep asking me questions about myself? And it's like, well, that's not actually how a friendship or relationship works. Like, it's not just like, I'll do nice things for you so you don't have to inquire about me personally.
Yeah.
And I kind of hope that that is where that dynamic goes, because it will be interesting to see that, you know, she does get things wrong on an emotional level and on a friendship level. Yeah. She's not always your best pal, David Tennant, sort of thing. Maybe she actually can be thoughtless.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's a bit childish in that way.
Yeah. I think that was the problem with that first series, is that, you know, what's this Doctor about? Oh, hope and everything's nice. And it's like, yeah, but the Doctor's more interesting than that.
Yeah.
The Doctor's multifaceted.
She kind of tries to guilt Yaz in that scene.
Yeah.
Like, since Graham and Brian left, haven't we had a good time?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, then shut up. Stop asking me questions.
Yeah.
It's that sort of like, oh.
Yeah.
That's actually not a nice...
No.
But I'm not going to take that and run with it as a, this is why this character's bad, because she does nasty things. And look at this scene with Graham as well, where she ignores his cancer diagnosis or whatever. I'm bored of that conversation. But it's like, you know... She is fallible. Maybe she's a fallible doctor. Maybe we've got a doctor that doesn't always get it right all the time.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
I like that.
Exactly. My biggest hope going into this, after seeing the first couple of seasons, or the first couple of episodes, was that thing where she has a social anxiety, she doesn't always interact with people in the right way, and I think that that's actually part of her character, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm.
It would be nice to see it develop. So by the end of this season, and by the time we get into the specials next year, there is another layer, or part of that joy and that kind of daftness has sort of tarnished a little bit, or it's a little bit extra texturing to it all. But I thought that was an interesting scene between the two of them.
Yeah.
And you're getting mad at it. It's like, it sounds like a couple having a row.
Yeah.
And I thought it was... They're obviously great. They've got a great chemistry.
Yeah. And it's a shame, isn't it? Again, when I was watching it, I was like, oh, I wish we could have had... Even if it was just a few episodes of just the two of them on their own.
But you couldn't, because there was... Because you had two other companions.
Mm.
And I think this story... Imagine if there were two other companions in there.
Oh, well, you just...
It's almost enough having Vinda, who they're going to obviously meet later on.
Yeah.
But then you've got... You're introducing Dan, you've got Yaz, you've got the Doctor... I can't imagine adding another companion into that mix, because having them there from the beginning would have been way too much.
Yeah.
So it's nice that they've kind of pared that back. I think it needed to be pared back.
Yeah.
Vinda is based on Observations Outpost Rose.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't call something in the Doctor Who universe
Rose
and it not actually end up being related to Rose.
Yeah.
In that case, just use a different name, because,
you
know...
Yeah, I mean...
What do you think?
Nah, she ain't going to come back, is she?
Well, she's not going to come back. Maybe not. But why would you call it that?
Oh, I don't know.
Observation post-Susan.
Is he a division man? I think he might be.
He probably is, isn't he?
Yeah.
Probably.
So he's a division man, but potentially.
But he doesn't seem to have kind of Time Lord tech like a TARDIS.
Though. No.
So do we think the Division are actually from an earlier point in Time Lord history before they developed time travel?
Yeah.
But they can't be, because the Fugitive Doctor has a Type 40 capsule.
Didn't they say that...
Or if it is a Type 40.
Carvanista was a Division agent.
Yeah, and obviously they're
not
using...
So maybe the Division isn't necessarily just a Time Lordy thing. Maybe the Division is just a big Illuminati-type organisation.
I think it's been...
It's a bit muddled,
tied
isn't it?
Into the Time Lords, though, from the start.
And now it's like, oh yeah, but this dog bloke was a member.
Unless he's just like a really good mercenary that they've brought in. So it could still be led by the Time Lords.
Yeah.
It's just occasionally they dep in, like, well, they've got the Jadoon involved before.
Oh yeah, true.
So maybe it's just people that are very good at their job, but it's actually led by the Time Lords ultimately.
Yeah,
that
fair enough.
Might make sense.
Yeah.
Swarm lurking in Azure's bedroom.
Yeah.
That was a really creepy scene. You know, we've kind of covered that. But that opening kind of panning shot of him through the doorway.
It's a fantastic silhouette. That angular, distorted. Obviously, his head's all bulbous and weird anyway. But the shoulder pads, like you said, is very sort of German expressionist.
Mm.
Bent and warped.
I'm getting a vibe off of him that he could go down as like a really popular villain.
Yeah. Oh,
for
I
the
think
long
so.
Term.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's
unusual, isn't it, actually? Because we've been talking lately with regards to like Stephen Moffat-y stuff about, oh, you know, no one remembers the monsters from a lot of those stories from that era. The Tesselector being one of them, and the
because I called it the wrong name. Yes. Even in the review, I called it the Tesseract. It's always like, it's actually called the Tesselector. I went, there you go.
Proving your point. Brilliant. But immediately, as soon as we see this guy, everyone's like, he's friggin' scary.
Yeah.
He was just, every time he appeared on screen, you were like, oh, he's back.
Yeah.
You just wanted to see him.
What's going to happen next?
Yeah.
And then eventually you get that confrontation with him and Jodie at the end. And there's, I mean, there's a lot to dig into there, which we'll get to. But you just, like, Jodie's way she played it as well was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
She's just as out of the loop as we are, which is actually really nice.
God, these bloody Chris Chibnall with these secrets.
I know.
Even the main actress doesn't know what's going on.
I know, clearly. It's just like, it's nice to have a villain that is brand new.
Yeah.
But is immediately captivating.
Yeah.
And great performance. I didn't write down the name of the actor who played
Swarm. Yeah, he's very good. I know the
really,
guy.
Really good. Mm. Really good. And the makeup job is superb.
Yeah.
I did get kind of, I looked at him and thought, right, so it's kind of like a Tim Shaw thing where it's like, it's a bloke with a facial disfigurement or a facial kind of design or whatever. Slender dude, talks in riddles and rhyme.
Mm.
But there's something about the character beyond the possible links to Time Lords and Jodie's past or the Fugitive Doctor or whatever. There's just something about the way that that character is being written and positioned that you think this is a big deal, this character. Yeah. And I think this character is going to have ramifications possibly, beyond the TV series. Mm. It's like, we could see this character in comics and stuff. Yeah. Like, if we're going to cover these adventures and these battles they seem to have had before, I can totally see people going, I want to write that villain's dialogue. I want to do something with that character.
What did you think of when he turned to the camera and said, trick or treat, Doctor?
It's Halloween. Fuck it. It's Doctor Who. So what? It doesn't matter.
It made me wince.
I did write down, are these Time Lords of some kind in Azure, could have been minded like the Fugitive Doctor. The Hopper virus particles make a return from Orphan 55.
Yeah, I had a moment where I was like, wait, what? And I was like, that is a reference to an episode, isn't it? And I was like, my brain was sort of going through my file of facts.
Yeah. And well, watched it. Stella chuckled at it. And I was like, okay. I was like, has she remembered that from a year ago? I'm watching this going like, I've erased Orphan 55 from my memory. Yeah. obviously, she's the proper fan. The species recall thing was really cool. Jodie's scene with Carvanista was I thought they had a good back and forth.
Yeah.
Makeup aside for Carvanista. I do worry with Jodie's, and this has nothing to do with the way that she performs, because I think actually this is detrimental to what she's actually doing.
Right.
That there's a bit too much cutting around her. There's that bit when they first land and Yaz is going, synchronized watches. Mm. I haven't got a watch. Any questions? No? Okay. And she runs off.
Yeah.
And there was just a bit too much cutting around that scene. I just thought, if you just left it on a two shot of Jodie just doing that, that would have been really lovely.
Mm.
But I just think there's a bit too much cutting wide when she spins around and her coat goes, and then cutting in close, and then reverse. I just think they cut around her performance too much.
Okay.
And I just don't think you get her as an actor through, and unless she's in a one-on-one confrontation with a master or with a swarm, and then her performance really comes to the fore.
Yeah.
But I just think there's way too much cutting.
Mm.
And when they do focus on her, they're giving her dialogue like, take that, loads of time vortex energy and that kind of stuff. And if you see that written down on a page as an actor, you must think, how am I going to make that line work? Because it's all like, take that. It's all like comic. It's stuff you'd see in the comic book and you go, I mean, nobody actually speaks like that. And you'd hate to give that to a line of dialogue to an actor.
Yeah.
Like Daniel Craig in No Time to Die, looking at the script going, die, Blofeld, die. Right, how am I gonna make that line of dialogue actually work? I think Jodie's given a lot of that stuff where she must look at it and just go, right, okay. I mean, I'll try. and she does.
Yeah.
But I just think I don't know if there's a lack of confidence from whoever's cutting it that they don't want to hang on her face too long or hang on her performance too long.
Hmm.
I have heard, and this is, allegedly,
right,
she's not great at learning her lines.
Really?
I don't know. I've also heard from that same person that King Michael Sheen is the new Doctor.
Oh yeah,
and the week before that
this.
was bloody Alex Horn was the new Doctor.
Yeah.
So there we go.
I will take that with the largest salt.
The largest pinch of salt in human history. The Flux. Let's talk about the actual corner point of this whole this whole series. Where has it come from? What are your immediate thoughts? Cotton Eye Joe.
Yeah.
What are your immediate thoughts on the Flux as a thing? Like, what do you think it is?
Big bloody problem, isn't it, really?
It's a problem for Doctor Who to solve.
It's a big problem for Doctor Who to solve, yeah. It's like Legopolis levels of shit.
Yeah, it's going wrong.
It's going bad, yeah. But this is what I liked about this as a story. It was just like, wow, you have gone in and set the stakes incredibly high, you know, for the Doctor on a personal level, for the universe. There is a lot of stuff that's going to need to be sorted out by the end of this story.
It does feel like
story.
Russell T. Davis finale level.
It does, doesn't it?
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
This is big.
Yeah, and I hope it's not going to be some sort of big red button and it all goes, and it's all back to normal.
I hope not, but at the same time, you know, with Doctor Who, you do have to just kind of go, well, let's just go along for the ride. And look, if it ends up being a bit of a crap resolution at the end of it, have I had a good time along the way? Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it really matter that it was a, you know, yeah, I suppose on a story level, if you really care about the integrity of your storytelling, which you probably should, but, you know, I'm not necessarily watching it for that. On a Sunday night, first time viewing, I'm there to just let it wash over me. I'll take
like the
it.
Flux.
Like the Flux, indeed. And I'll just watch it and enjoy it. On a second rewatch, I might start to notice some chinks in the armour. But I didn't really hear.
No.
In fact, I found it a much more competent sort of like watch.
Yeah.
As a piece of television rather than just Sunday night entertainment.
I know. That still doesn't
sound
right.
It still doesn't sound right, does
God,
it?
God, how did people in the 80s cope when it was on bloody Mondays and Thursdays?
Oh, twice a week?
Yeah.
Thank you. TARDIS doors moving around was a really cool visual. Having it in the floor was really neat.
Doors opened outwards like a proper police box.
And that was fine in that instance. Yeah. That was okay.
It happens in the Ice Warriors. It can happen here.
Hang on a minute. But the doors open inward on the prop.
Yeah.
On the other side of the door. And then when they come out, so is there a second set of doors on the other side? Because it's the police.
Maybe they're just double hinged.
Double hinged. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Whatever. Sontarans.
Yeah.
Popping up like 10 minutes before the end of the story to do their bit.
Yeah. I saw there was a really good, I think it might have been The Guardian. I was going to find the headline, but Jonathan read it out to me last night because he was looking up lots of stuff about it. And I think the headline or the byline for this article was something like, a load of dogs, 7 billion dogs save humanity, while Doctor Who's more interesting villains like pop up in the background for a bit. I was like, yeah, that was pretty much sums it up. I thought they looked great.
I really hated that scene when I first saw it.
I did think all that stuff about,
you look disgusting. It's like, that's not how they talk.
Me and Johnny were like, oh no. And I watched it again and I did laugh.
I the second time, I actually thought, it's fine. But the third, it just sounded wrong.
Yeah.
Them, like them having that back and forth. It's like, oh, they're not going to be comedy foils again, are they?
It was that
like, you've got the look right.
Yeah.
You've got, by the looks of it, I mean, Dan Starkey's obviously there as Kraegar or whatever his name is. He's obviously a great seasoned Sontaran actor.
Yeah.
He's great in the role.
And he's doing it like he does his big Finnish performances. Yeah. Like, okay, this is a classic series Sontaran, Kevin Lindsay-esque voice, which is what he wanted to do in the Poison Sky Sontaran Stratagem. I remember him mentioning it on Doctor Who Confidential, and he was like, oh, I was doing all the tongue stuff. And they were like, no, you don't need to do that.
But it's back.
It's back, and it's so much better. Yeah, you want a bit of tongue action from your Sontarans.
And the other one was good.
He was all right. Scottish Sontaran.
As soon as he opened his mouth, I went, that is the most Sontaran-sounding Sontaran I've ever heard.
Horrible teeth, I like that.
And
the makeup looked really good. I thought the makeup looked so much better seeing it properly.
I did think, and maybe this is just because of the way that they looked beforehand, where the head doesn't actually move.
Yeah.
Like, you know, from the head... There's no neck movement at all. And I did kind of think there were a few times where the main Sontaran turned and moved his head up a bit. And I thought, God, if you move it up too high, you're going to see the bloody join where the thing's going to pop out the top. It's going to be the two doctors all over again. But no, I thought that they were great.
Yeah. It whet my appetite. Someone mentioned about, you know, the fact that a lot of this story was like, cool, look at this. This is coming up. And I said, oh, you know, the stuff in Liverpool with the old blokes wasn't really necessary. Mm. But then again, you could argue that about the Weeping Angels and the Sontarans. But at least with the Weeping Angels and the Sontarans and obviously Swarm, you know, that was there and it whet my appetite and it made me go, ooh, I want to see the Sontarans. I want to see the Angels.
The Sontarans being in that story were critical for the comeback next week. Because it's like, okay, so in the next time trailer, the Sontarans are in there.
Yeah.
And I liked the fact that they were just being really pig-headed and like, the Swarm's happening, it is a strategic sort of advance for us. Like, we can take an advantage of this.
Yeah.
I thought, that's very Sontaran.
Yeah.
Like, you know, pig-headedness, don't care about what everybody else is getting on with. This is really, you know, this could end the war with the Rutans kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like that. It was nice to see them just kind of being Sontarany.
Yeah.
You know, not throwing newspapers at Jenna Coleman and having comedy sound effects. And...
For fuck's sake. Have you seen the American trailer for the next story?
No.
So in the American trailer, there's more footage
of Sontarans.
Of Sontarans, and the Sontarans are on the battlefield.
Yeah.
Helmets on, guns at the ready, with the lead Sontaran with the scarred face on the horse.
Is that the main, the Scottish one?
Yeah. So he plays two Sontarans, I believe.
Oh, okay.
The one that we saw in the episode last night, and then he plays
another one,
like a more grizzled one.
Right.
And I think he's the one that's on the battlefield that says to Jodie, I accept your
massacre
or whatever it is, yeah. And they do Sontar-ha.
Okay.
But they've all got guns in their hands and they just stamp their leg. So
okay.
They go Sontar-ha, cluck. So there's no haka. Yeah. Which I was like, I can cope with your Sontar-has if you're only
stamp your little feet instead.
Yeah. But if you start doing the haka, then it's a bit more ridiculous.
I understand. Really nice to see them back. I thought, I can set myself up for a good Sontaran story
next
week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to next week.
I mean, so the Flux, we initially thought it's bringing all of these things through.
Yeah.
Because it's just like a big menagerie of different monsters. Yeah. That obviously isn't the case, or what we suspect isn't the case.
Why are they all here?
So why is the Weeping Angel there?
Yeah, what's that Weeping Angel
what
doing?
Is going on? You know, and the Cybermen obviously will turn up at some point too.
Yeah, on the Ood.
And the Ood.
Yeah, this is the thing.
I thought
that after watching this first episode, I was like, actually, a lot of what we see in that trailer
is from that first story.
From the first episode. We know so little.
No, I know.
You know, because I remember seeing people, they've shown too much. When we come from an era when we never see anything.
It's literally... the first two... It's the first episode and a half, really, that the majority of that material is from.
Yeah.
And so, Sontarans... Cybermen and Ood, we've still got to come. The Merry Seacole thing is obviously next week.
Yeah.
So all of that stuff on the battlefield will be over by that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's still so much we haven't got a clue about. It's really, really exciting. And
I was shocked, actually, because when I saw that stuff in the trailer with the Doctor and Swarm, I assumed that was like a few episodes in.
That's
like,
going to be near the finale. That's the ultimate face-off sort of thing.
Nope. Episode one.
Our final battle has begun in episode one. That's a nice change.
Yeah.
It's not like our final battle has begun. Got 50 minutes to sort this out.
Yeah.
It's like they're actually going to have like an extended conflict across the next five episodes, which I think is really, really cool. So I've got down here onto that. The first face-off with Swarm. So here's the lines of dialogue that Swarm says to the Doctor. They were so efficient, there's not a tiny corner of you that remembers. You and I dancing across space and time, locked in combat, and now after so long apart, we get to do it once more. I remember every battle, which gives me the advantage. Our final fight has begun.
Mm.
So which, do we think it's Jodie that he's faced off with before?
No.
It's going to be an older Doctor?
It's going to be like Joe Martin, I reckon.
Do you think it's Joe Martin?
Mm.
So then, does that change anything about... If it is Joe Martin, does that change anything about where you think Joe Martin's placement is in the show?
I would imagine it was before Billy
Arnold. Before Hartnell. He's still going to go with that as the main thing. Interesting.
It's interesting. It's interesting. I mean, you know... Say what you will about the timeless children. I shouldn't have drank San Pellegrino. Say what you will about the timeless children, whether it's a bad idea or not. When stuff like this comes up, it does make you go, ooh, what does it mean?
Yeah, of course it does.
You know, it's keeping us interested, isn't it?
I think...
It's doing its job.
It is. And it's like... you know, maybe there was a plan this whole time.
Yeah, well, I think probably was. I think there probably was.
Like, okay, so, you know, maybe the pandemic got in the way slightly.
Yeah.
But it does kind of feel like everything is coming to a head. Everything that we've had over the last couple of years, you know, that first season they've said was a foundational year, setting the stage. You know, the second series has introduced the Timeless Children and the Division. Third series seems to be paying that off.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, maybe it won't pay everything off when we have the specials to wrap all of that up next year. I suppose that's the frustrating thing about knowing so far in advance what the plan is, that you know there's still going to be enough to after this series that we'll need to, you know, kind of answer.
It's funny you should say that, because I mentioned someone in the office today. I said, oh, we're recording this tonight. I said, because the new series has just started. And he said, oh, is that the series with the old guy, Russell T Davies, coming back? And I said, no, 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 that's next year. I went, no, 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 that's the year after next. And he went, bloody hell, they'd like to announce this stuff very far in advance, don't they?
Just before I came in as well, I did see a report in the Times.
About the money.
£40 million that BBC Studios might lose.
Yeah.
But then I did see somebody, I think it was Guy Lambert, responded to that on Twitter.
Yeah.
Saying, but if the idea is to make it a massive property again and you've got spin-offs and stuff, it's like, well, it's going to make the money back anyway, so maybe we don't need to panic at all.
Yeah.
And also the Times hid it behind a paywall, so I couldn't read the article fully anyway, so there we go, there's journalistic integrity for you. Diane getting lured into that spooky house. When I watched it last night and then watching it again today, I still think that Azur's dialogue wasn't actually over that initially.
So what did she say?
That whole,
come into my den.
That whole thing.
Did she end up in Wookiee Hole Caves?
It kind of looked like Wookiee
Hole.
Yeah,
I was like, Christ, Sarah Jane's going to come speeding along on her little boat.
Bloody kill Elizabeth Sladen in a speedboat, get her head decapitated. I loved that whole thing, because it's just another level of what is actually going on.
Yeah.
You know, so,
and I like when Doctor Who does that.
Yeah, I know.
See, I like stuff like Kinder and Ghost Knight, where you're just like, what does it all mean?
It's actually quite, it's just got a really scary feel. Like her coming out of the darkness, Azur coming out of the darkness was like, I mean, if I was seven, that would be terrifying.
Yeah.
And you know, swarms standing in the doorway, that would be petrifying.
Yeah.
This whole run has actually, I think, introduced quite a lot of really scary moments.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, basically the whole of Can You Hear Me? With the fingers coming off and all that sort of stuff.
Can you finger me?
I think that
oh god, that's gonna be some bastard's gonna cut that in isolation.
I hope so. It's done that the kind of fear factor stuff quite well, I think. Fuck you. There we go. I was wondering which part of it would derail the episode, but there we go. So she gets lured into the spooky house, back into her inn. So is she going to be bait to, like, as, like, emotional bait for Dan? If she is, do they know each other well enough for that to be enough of an emotional pull? You know, we're going out for drinks that night. That seems like a first date.
Yeah.
We obviously like each other, but, you know.
What if he's going to turn to the doctor and be like, hey, you know what, Doc? I don't give a shit.
It's like dangling her over Wookiee Hole Cave. It's like, I actually don't know her.
Yeah.
Like, you know. We're gonna have fun with you was the line. So are they gonna turn her into one of those? You're still thinking about fingers.
Well, when you just said, are we gonna have fun with you? That was
there. We go.
I'm so sorry. I'm a child.
And a cool cliffhanger.
Brilliant cliffhanger.
Oh my god, it's actually the end of the universe.
A couple of things before we get to the end of the universe. Lovely shot of the TARDIS in space with Dan and Doodah and Doctor Who in the doorway.
Yeah.
And I love that shot with the eyeball. That was going around a lot on Twitter of Jodie's eye when it was like...
That was cool. Nice to have a title sequence again that has stayed consistent for the entire run.
But just Flux, Doctor Who
adding,
Flux.
Adding the Flux subtitle, adding John Bishop's name to it, obviously.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It actually feels like the end of the universe. It feels like, you know, I always wondered what the end of the universe would look like.
Yeah.
It's like, well, and I don't know if it was intentional, but when they cut to each of the different kind of things across time, Williamson in Liverpool, you know, Claire getting zapped, the Sontaran waving his wanking stick and, you know, doing all that. It was like there was a bit of music playing underneath it that had the Sagan dun 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 dun.
Oh, did it?
It didn't. I don't think it was quite going dun dun dun.
Oh, right.
But it was a kind of drone that kind of sounded like they're obviously calling to the theme tune.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really neat kind of a neat idea. And the last note for the episode itself was dedicated to Julie Atkinson. Did you see the credit?
Foley artist.
So obviously responsible for, since 2005, most of the Foley sound effects that we've heard on Doctor Who. So thank you very much, Julie, for your contribution to the show.
Like, that's really sad.
We'll be hearing, we've heard it this whole time.
Yeah.
It's embedded into television. So, you know, amazing work, clearly, and, you know, rest in peace and all that. So, Doctor Who Flux, the Halloween Apocalypse. What did we think? What are our thoughts going forward into next week and for the rest of the series? What does it all mean, Matthew?
I know, I'm just excited. I'm just excited to see where it all goes. I'm excited to see my Santoran friends on Sunday. Hopefully they won't cock them up by doing any silly stuff.
Fingers crossed. I think you've stolen one of the great Santoran lines of all time. In I can't remember which one it was, in one of your action figure adventures. You must be this high to ride this. I think that might actually be one of the great unused.
Yeah, I was really proud of that.
Santoran lines. If you haven't seen that, go back and watch that action figure adventure.
It was
still
called
on YouTube.
The Honor of War.
The Honor of War. It's a good one.
Tom
you
Baker.
Always knew when there was a new action figure out. Wonder what story Batman March is going to do with that. That action figure now.
Season 18 style Tom Baker story after Keeper Trocken.
Gotta love it.
Yeah.
You know, if you weren't excited for Doctor Who Flux before it started, surely this is setting you up for like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah.
This is, you know, it's really exciting. My God, the NMDs were going, this is the best thing Chris Chibnall's written.
Yes.
And I actually dropped in and watched one of their live streams because, you know, doom scrolling and hate watching is something that you should do if you want to stay healthy. mentally. And it was like, whoa, this dynamic is completely different. They're not ranting and raving. They're not shouting and crying and shitting themselves and complaining about black people being on television or women being on television or disabled people being on television.
Or
like that
people.
Telegraph article. And people who wrote that article for the Telegraph can go fuck themselves in their stupid faces. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Anyway. It was just really, like, lovely to be... Everybody's actually quite enjoying this.
Yeah.
And, you know, until you said in the morning, oh, God, I have that conversation about bloody ratings.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, cool. You know, this is actually...
I haven't really seen much about that, to be honest.
I haven't.
People are just enjoying it enough that they're just like, oh, well.
God, I hope it stays that way.
Yeah.
Is this the only week this year where we're going to be able to go, everybody liked it, and they were, and everybody got on, and it was fine, you know?
My God. We're living in a weird timeline, I think. Something weird is going on. It's those solar flares.
The flux is actually affecting
everything. I think that's it.
My God.
I thought maybe that was some weird marketing ploy when that happened last night. When the power went off, I was like, oh,
how
God.
How much did the BBC pay the National Grid to, like, just an hour before the show? Can you freak everybody out by turning the power out for a bit?
Could you imagine if it had happened, like, as the flux was coming towards the TARDIS and all the lights went out?
Bang.
My God!
That would have been amazing.
Oh, one complaint I do have.
Yeah.
And this is not against Doctor Who,
but
against the BBC. Don't put Wurzel fucking Gummidge talking over the credits.
Over the end credits.
Even my mum was like, why did they do that?
Stella was saying, I think that's so rude.
Yeah.
Because not only is it like, okay, you know, working in telly, it's like, you want to see your name. Because, you know, that's half the reason that you do the job is to go, there we go, there's my name at the end. It's all kind of worth it or whatever. But to have somebody talk over one of the best renditions of the Doctor Who theme ever.
Yeah.
Oh, get the thing. And they've changed the idents are new, the kind of the whole vibe of BBC One is new now. And it looks, I quite like it. I like the new kind of graphics package. But please don't play bloody promos over the end of the title sequence.
Enough.
It's so boring.
And especially because, like,
it's your most iconic theme tune besides Match of the Day. And nobody cares about watching the credits of Match of the Day. They even play the full bloody theme at the end of Match of the Day.
There we go.
Anyway.
Ran over.
That was Doctor Who Flux, Chapter 1, The Halloween Apocalypse, as reviewed by the Review of Death. It was a really, really interesting opening to the series. I really enjoyed it.
I loved it.
Matt said he loved it.
Yeah. Matt, maybe I'm just high on sugar from that San Pellegrino.
You did say you loved it last night.
I did really enjoy it. Like, after what was a sort of, not plodding start, but a start, a muddled start, because obviously it was trying to introduce all these things, there was just so much building and building and building until you were just like,
fever pitch.
I need to know what happens next.
Yeah. And it's done.
I want to know what's going on with these angels. I want to know what's going on with these Sontarans. I want to know who Crystal Meth Man is and his wife. Oh, no, his sister.
His sister. Oh, yeah. There might be a weird dynamic going on there. We don't know. But yeah, we will see you next week for a review of Doctor Who, Flux Chapter 2, War of the Sontarans. Thankfully, nobody's complaining about that title anymore, that Doctor Who's actually good again. And yeah, until then, we'll see you later. Enjoy the episode.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.